Well, we've been gone for a week, and now we're back. Welcome to a very special family affair episode of the 51 Yard Line, episode 11. We're taping this on Wednesday, March, I don't even remember, the 12th?
It's 11.
13?
Wow, we are all bad
this is
at
really
this.
Bad.
It's
the 11th. Pear shaped.
It's a little embarrassing.
It's the 11th. Pear shaped.
Hashtag pear
shaped. You don't even know when you're flying out tomorrow.
Nope, no idea.
Nice work.
Well, as always, guys, I am one of your hosts, Tyler Berry. To my left, Drew Willers.
What's going on, guys?
To my other left, Steve Cravens.
What's going on?
And our very special guest for the evening, Drew's brother, Jake Willers. Jake, what's up, buddy?
Not much. Just enjoying my time in LA here. It's
yeah,
been
man.
Pretty fantastic.
Jake's all the way out here from the Willers clan's home state of Minnesota, and we're happy to have him.
Mm-hmm. Lots of margaritas.
Too much.
Yes. Just lots of drinking in general, I would say, absolutely. Over the course of the past almost week that you've been here, Jake.
It's a lot of alcohol.
Yeah. wouldn't have it any other way when you're in the Barry Nicewinder Willers home.
That's just very true.
It's kind of just how it goes. Well, guys, we got an insane amount to get into tonight. Yes. I want to touch base on a lot of Minnesota sports with these two Minnesota sports fans here. But we also have to talk a lot about NFL free agency because, good Lord, it's probably the craziest NFL free agency in our lifetimes, maybe.
I
can't think
hot.
Of another. I can't think of a crazier one.
I honestly
this.
Can't remember the last time that we've seen so many, like, player-for-player trades. I haven't seen that
and, like,
high-profile
player-for-player
yeah.
trades,
yeah,
too.
It's been big. Really big to see.
So let's get into the a couple that we missed by not having an episode on Sunday. The biggest one that happened at the end of last week, obviously it wasn't made official until yesterday, Shady McCoy to the Bills.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
Probably maybe not the most, not my most surprising one, but it's probably top two or three surprising in terms of
I
this
I think Philly fans
agency.
Are awfully surprised. I think Philly fans and now can with two consecutive off seasons they have to deal with losing their two best what has been the two best weapons on that offense has got to be pretty shocking. I mean, you got to be as a Philly fan I'd be wondering what are we doing here? Like are we I mean,
what's Chip Kelly doing?
I'd be honest with you, I have no idea. I mean, we talked about a little bit on our last episode. We talked about how Oregon, he's trying to basically build the professional version of his Oregon team, that he has an obsession with his Oregon guys, why he probably got Kiko Alonso.
Yeah.
That being said, I did not see them dishing out Shady.
It's just, it's crazy. I mean, like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? I was watching the NFL Network today, and they were talking about Chip Kelly specifically. And what this little gambling experiment of his, how it could end up. One, all the gambling pays off, and he's hailed as a genius. It's like, wow, you know, he took a big gamble, it's all working. It's fantastic, good for him. On the flip side, he literally gets crucified in the middle of downtown Philadelphia and lit on fire. But he, at the end of the day, what's he have to lose? His job, he goes to college and coaches back in college, and he makes a ton of money doing it. So you know what?
Yeah.
Does he really lose? I mean,
at first, what I thought his whole plan was that, like, when he took in Alonso, I thought, you know, he was developing, like, a young team, a team that he could mold and all that together. Well, now you got talks of DeMarco Murray flying in and
right.
you got all this other stuff happening where they're bringing in different veterans. And now you're kind of thinking, what is he really? He's kind of the Mad Hatter right now. I mean, you really, like, it's unpredictable what he's going to do next.
One for a long time, he kept talking about how they were going to go probably the Mariota. Is that how you say
Mariota.
It?
Mario. Yeah, that's why they call him
Super Mariota. Yep, okay. So they were talking a long time about bringing him in, and all of a sudden, this basically, you swap quarterbacks. I mean, essentially, Nick Foles and Sam Bradford are two sides same coin. Like,
yeah, they're both
injury.
They both can't.
Upside,
move.
Exactly. not a lot of.
They're
mobility.
Not mobile quarterbacks.
They've
at
got
all.
Decent arms, but yeah. I mean, Nick Foles was hurt most of last year. Sam Bradford's been hurt most of his career. So
I think Chip Kelly, though, if anything, he may be playing that card really close to the chest, not letting anyone know about his interest with Mariota.
For
because
sure.
like, if you start saying like, you know, how much Chip Kelly wants him and how desperate he is for him. Just imagine what, like, Tennessee
value.
And Tampa are going to ask for. They're going to be like, oh, you really want that bad? Okay,
give us everything you got.
Well, Tampa's taking Jameis.
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee and the...
No, I got you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tennessee now, especially with the Jake Locker surprise retirement.
Oh, that's weird, too.
That's called quitting. That was a weird one.
I don't know, man. He's pretty hurt.
He's been hurt.
He took a lot of injuries.
He's pretty hurt.
He's another...
But at 26, just like, gee, like, it's stunning.
It is, but I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing this more and more. Yeah. With how much... With what we see ends up happening to a lot of veterans that play long careers, like, decade-plus careers, mm-hmm. and the types of injuries that they have to endure, and the way that those veterans talk about what they're dealing with with life after the NFL... I wouldn't be surprised if this starts becoming a little bit more normal. Guys quitting before 30, guys wanting to keep their health intact if they're injury prone or if they've experienced, you know, heavy setbacks, not wanting to push the envelope, not trying to push their bodies too far to the point where, you know, when it's time to call it quits and then you can't walk.
Yeah. Plus, Jake Locker's not an idiot. He knows he's not, like, a prolific elite quarterback. It's not like a team is dying for him to get back out on the field after another injury-prone season.
Paul Allen for Twin Cities Radio was thinking that if... Because obviously Castle was gone with the trade to the Bills.
Sure.
And we, you know, Ponder's obviously gone forever, hopefully. I never want to see him in a Viking uniform ever again. But that being said, you got to find a backup for Teddy. And Paul Allen was talking about maybe bringing in Jake Locker and doing that whole spiel. So, yeah. But... I guess he's calling it quits.
It's too bad. I mean, he had a lot of potential. I mean, when he was up for the draft, I mean,
he's
the Vikes were really, really considering him. And
I remember that draft.
We took a different path. We went with...
Christian Ponder.
Not that Christian Ponder worked out great for you guys, but I'm not 100% sure Jake Locker would have worked out any better.
I mean, it's...
No.
I mean, if you can't stay on the field, you can't stay healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really...
At least Ponder was able to stay on the field for a couple of seasons.
I would have liked him not to.
I actually can't even remember the injuries Jake Locker had, but I know every time he had an injury, it was like rest of the season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was gone. Yeah.
Well, we sort of touched on it for a second, but let's just talk about the second big Eagles-centric trade, which is Sam Bradford for Nick Foles. Sam Bradford is headed to the Eagles.
Yeah.
Do we think, well, you already kind of touched on this, but do we think that sort of means the end of this, like, Chip Kelly going for Mariota talk, or
I'm not throwing it out the window. At this point, I think all bets are off with Chip Kelly in Philly.
He's putting too many pieces together to signal the fact that he really is, like I said the other day, trying to build that, like, Oregon plus team, like that Oregon professional team. Like, he's got what? With Kiko Alonso, I believe that makes an even 10 Oregon players that at one time or another played under Chip Kelly at Oregon. That's a fifth of your team, of your active roster right there. Like, there's a good chance he's getting some extra pieces to use as trade bait to move up to probably six, which is where I'll need
to be. You kind of look at, like, the faces of Philadelphia right now, and if DeMarco Murray comes in there, you got DeMarco Murray in the front, and then you got Kiko Alonso, the up-and-coming star in that defense, and then your quarterback's going to be Bradford? You're kidding.
Yeah, I don't see it.
He's gonna just just imagine like a big three picture, like a big billboard, and that's who you see. Sam Bradford up there.
I don't see it. I think he's
Does he even start?
No. See, that's what I'm saying. Right now, yes.
Because they got rid of Nick Foles.
So. Right.
But I mean they're gonna make a huge
re-signed Sanchez, right?
Yeah, the Sanchez is not starting.
I'm not saying he's starting, but listen, you sign Sanchez, then you got Bradford, and then let's say you go after Mariota. That's three quarterbacks.
Well, here's the thing. Well, I don't know the details of Bradford's contract, but I'm sure they didn't give him a ton of money because they were like, bro, you haven't played more than, what, 7-6 games the last two seasons? We're not giving you starting quarterback money. You're going to earn it. They created a lot of cap room by shipping LeSean McCoy out the door. Sanchez wasn't a lot of money. So you've got, for the most part, I don't know what their cap room scenario is, but for the most part, at least at the quarterback position, they don't have guys that they're paying a ton of money.
No.
Which leaves, in my mind, or I'm guessing, the room to pay money
to a franchise first round rookie quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I believe that guy is going to be Marcus Mariota for sure. Mm-hmm. I just don't see any other way around it.
Yeah, I guess in another way I see it, I mean, like, if it really, really worked, I see it as like the Moneyball scenario, where basically you take a bum-legged quarterback and you bring him in and you basically say, you know what, he's not crazy talented, mm-hmm. but if we work him in the system correctly, he will be the cheapest and best option we have. And if he can just run the offense smoothly, well, maybe if you get DeMarco Murray in there, then you're okay. Then you've made the perfect scenario where you don't have to pay huge money for a quarterback when right. everyone else in the league's doing it and you're not doing it. You have so much more money for other guys out there.
But mm-hmm. do you trust a guy like Sam Bradford to be able to take as many snaps as he is supposed to take in that Philadelphia high-tempo offense?
You got to get a good O-line. And like I said before, it's got to be like a good scenario. I mean, you really got to set it up right where you're protecting him a lot. And also, too, you know, I started thinking about it more. Sam Bradford's from the Big 12. Not to say there was really no college offense close to what Chip Kelly did, you know, in Oregon. But Oklahoma did run a spread. And Big 12 is all about big offense like that. So I can see Bradford transitioning to that, you know, fairly better than I think maybe he was in the Rams, you know, when it was mostly Steven Jackson. That's maybe true. Play action and all that. So, you know, obviously it's a long shot. But I don't see it right now, but maybe that's the way Chip Kelly's looking at it.
I think that's a smart way to look at it, because also you think about who else they've signed. They just signed your consummate third down back in Ryan Matthews. Like, mm-hmm. that's your passing down back right there, as far as I'm concerned. If you bring in DeMarco Murray,
You brought in Frank Gore. No, Gore's going to the Colts. Gore's going to the Colts.
If you can land DeMarco Murray and let him do the, like, haul of the actual, like, get most of the actual carries. And then you've got Ryan Matthews, who's like a tough back for sure. Got him in on your passing downs for like your pass blocking and also your little check downs and stuff like that, that can be a pretty solid offense even under a injury prone Sam Bradford, I would say.
Yeah. Yep. And they also give a lot of money.
Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
Or Sanchez.
I mean, they did show productivity with Sanchez until they went into, I think it was Lambeau, and everything just fell apart for him and collapsed. Yeah. Like, Sanchez just fell apart. He went back to New York Jets, Sanchez.
Yeah. That's very true.
So, I mean, there is potential for mediocre quarterbacks to come in and really shake up that offense, but for the same time, when they went up against elite teams, it went downhill fast.
That's very true. All right, let's move on from that. Gosh, there's just so much. I don't even know what to pick. Let's spend a second on Steve's Niners. Steve, first of all, we got Torrey Smith with, I believe, a 5-year contract.
It's a good pickup. I didn't expect him to sign there either.
It's sweet though, man. I mean, it's sweet for two reasons. One, Cap actually has a deep threat that can actually get there when he throws those rockets. So yep. That's sweet. But also, hey, Bolden and Smith are back together.
That's true.
And I follow both of them on Twitter, and they've been posting photos of the two of them together with 81, 82
cool.
all day. Like yay, cool. let's do this. So
it's pretty sweet.
That's pretty sweet. So seeing that's great, was pretty man. Cool. But yeah, so I'm just glad that, you know, now Kaepernick has two legitimate, you know, I'm not calling Crabtree, you know,
elite,
a fraud. I mean, Torrey Smith, watching the highlights, watching what he did with Joe Flacco and the Ravens. You know, and especially Bolden, looking what Bolden did this quarter, even though it was very mediocre, having those two options, you know, it's better than Stevie Johnson and, no offense, Crabtree. I mean, what Crabtree was doing all season wasn't that impressive, no offense. I mean, from what I understand, he wasn't that impressive after he injured himself in May 2013, I believe, and he was out for the first half of the 2013 season. Mm-hmm. And he never was the same again, apparently. So
I feel like the Niners organization still feels like, you know what, you held out your rookie year, and you held out for, you know, basically three quarters of the season.
Right.
And he never ended up being the guy that we paid for.
Well, and also, so you know, apparently he was a cancer in the locker room.
Was he?
Just constantly bitching that he wasn't getting the ball enough. He's a third down receiver.
Yeah.
You know, Cap wasn't throwing enough. He was giving it to Bolden. He was handing it off to Gore. He was giving it to Stevie Johnson, Brandon Lloyd. He wasn't giving it to him enough. So you don't want a guy like that in your locker room talking shit and just complaining and bitching and moaning, because then you go the way of Brandon Marshall and get the hell out of the locker room.
Absolutely.
I think the best thing about that pickup with Torrey Smith now, too, is that you get that deep threat again, and maybe things will open up for Vernon Davis, because last year Vernon Davis could not do a whole... Yeah, he was a no-show, and I don't know if it was because of the offensive scenario they were setting up or everyone, like, all the defense just came down on him because he never got the ball. But, like, when you guys had your runs at the NFC Championship at the Super Bowl, Vernon Davis was big time. Vernon Davis was a big time.
Well, champion. You know, we saw him get 2 touchdowns against Dallas week one. After that,
yeah,
nothing.
Well, he's hurt, mm-hmm. but yeah,
but still nothing. Like, even yeah. when they're in the red zone, nothing. I mean, Cap would throw to Brandon Lloyd, Stevie Johnson, he'd hand it off to Gore, whatever. But
he was also, I remember we were watching, I don't remember what game we were watching at your place, but we were watching a game, he was dropping passes.
Bolden was dropping a lot of passes too. I don't know what was going on. Like, I mean, Bolden felt so bad about dropping the I think he dropped like 3 passes in the Saints game. One of them would have been a runaway touchdown if he held on to it, and he felt compelled to apologize to 49ers fans and be like, guys, I am sorry. I don't know what is going on with me. Usually I have that stuff. Like, when you feel compelled to apologize to your fans for a performance, that's when you know it's like, okay, I screwed up. I need to get my shit together. So Bolden was dropping shit. You know, Davis was a no-show. But like you said, who knows? Maybe that'll allow the defense to start covering deeper and kind of, you know, start covering deeper and just leave the, you know, the midsection a little bit more open for him.
Yeah, because really what Torrey Smith's all about is, at least with the Ravens, he was just booking it down the field every single time. And then Forsett would be open underneath. And then you got, I can't remember the tight ends for Baltimore, but I know they were very successful with Joe Flacco. And maybe Torrey Smith was that key just because he could just dart it down the field and safeties
Dennis
and
Pitta,
quarterbacks.
It was Dennis Pitta, yeah. Owen Daniels, I think, for a little bit. Todd mm-hmm. Heat.
And they've been successful. So maybe this will finally open it up for Vernon Davis to be successful again.
It'd be nice to see him. And also, a cool thing about Torrey Smith, he's 26. He's in his prime.
He is that's young. Yeah, I didn't realize
prime,
he's that young.
Prime
he's
time. A, that's prime time.
So, sweet. You know, it's not like Bolden where he's 34?
I mean, Bolden's up
he was
there.
He was born in 1980. He was born in 1980. Old. So he's been around for... So Bolden's... Yeah. But, you know, this guy, you know, he's 26. He's arguably in his prime. So, you know what? He'll be around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sure. that's good. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Cool. Let's go to probably the most high-profile signing, I would say. Ndamukong Suh to the Dolphins for a just asinine Whoa. Amount of money.
Yeah. Can I say something?
Go,
I'm talking
go.
To a lot of Dolphins fans back home, guys.
I bet you have.
I texted him like, guys, are you going to buy the jersey? Are you excited? And then he was like, no. My buddy Charlie, he's like, no, I'm not going to buy the jersey. I'm going to buy this. Send me the link. Custom-made shirt. Has the Dolphins logo and says, there's a tsunami coming to South Florida.
Oh, God.
Followed quickly by an earthquake.
Oh, so many but bad puns.
I hope someone rich enough
God.
Buys all of those shirts and just burns
no,
them.
No, no. Those shirts that will be bought will be worn. But anyway, but no. I mean,
I hope it backfires.
Let's say this about the so Dolphins. Can we agree so that the Dolphins last season played better than their 8-8 season record suggested?
Yes.
There were a lot of close games they lost.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't know if I mean, some of it was due to the offense, some of it was due to the defense, whatever. But I mean, do you? And I'm asking this. I mean, I have my answer, but I'm going to ask you guys: is Sue a player that can take you from an 8-8 season to a 10-6?
If he's a believer and he buys in and you can get him to compete at the highest level at all times.
And get him to not have a fucking attitude
absolutely.
Problem.
Absolutely. Then
does he motivate the guys around him?
If he doesn't have an attitude problem.
Yeah, like that's what's like, how, like.
But if he gets off on the wrong foot, he's going to be a cancer in that locker room.
He said right off the bat that being going to a competitor had nothing to do with it. He only wanted money. What does that tell you right off the bat?
Well, obviously, it's not.
I'm not saying he's not going to come in and not do his job. He's definitely going to come in and do his job, and he might do it really, really well. But
I just don't see him
stomping on quarterbacks.
I don't see him.
He's still going to be getting involved in extracurricular, beyond the whistle activities.
I don't see him being worth $60 million guaranteed.
Yeah. $60 million. And the reason why we talked about it a little bit, but the reason why I really, really, really hope it backfires really badly is. If it works, then owners with tons of money, your Jerry Joneses, they're just going to write guaranteed contracts for the best players, and salary cap will mean nothing. It will mean zero, which is one of the things that makes the NFL so compelling and so fun to watch, is that there is a cap. And yes, there are ways. There's always been ways around the cap and blah, 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 but no one is. I cannot remember the last time somebody shelled out this much guaranteed money for somebody who's not a quarterback.
Yeah.
And a quarterback is a position. And that's basically what Tyler and I are saying. If you're going to give this kind of money to somebody, he needs to have it all. Not just on the field, but off the field as well.
and in the locker room and on the practice field.
Absolutely.
And that's, and I don't think Ndamukong Suh has...
Unless he turns over a completely new leaf, which I cannot see.
And now you've got him in South Beach, partying in Miami.
Oh my God, I didn't even think about that.
Like, I mean, the nightlife in Detroit versus the nightlife in South Beach, get out of here.
Oh.
With 60 mil to spend, too.
And take a look at the coach, too. Take a look at the coach he's working with, Joe Philbin. How much power does this guy have over his players? How much influence does he have over his players? Not much. Don Shula who's going to scare the shit out of you.
Well, look at what we were talking about in the locker room. They were already having locker room problems a couple years ago. They had a huge quarterback issue last year when he wouldn't commit to the press that he was starting Tannehill.
Yeah, right.
That created controversy in and of itself.
Right.
I hope it doesn't work. Because if it works, more teams are going to do something like this, and I think it's going to suck.
It would work with a coach like Don Shula.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe Philbin, he's not Don Shula. He doesn't have that kind of intimidation on his players where you fear this guy if you screw up. He's not Bill Belichick. He's not these coaches who really have that presence where it's just like, I am not going to screw up or do anything stupid for fear of this guy.
But the way that you help that dynamic and that relationship is you don't give a player $60 million. He has no reason to be afraid of anybody. He could sign a $60 million deal with fucking New England. He wouldn't care. If he's getting $60 million, who does he have to answer to? Hey, you can yell at me all you want. You can get mad at me all you want. I got my $60 million up front. Up front. Who on the Patriots gets $60 million? Guaranteed. When was the last time a Patriots player got $60 million guaranteed?
When's the last time a defensive player got $60 million?
Oh, I couldn't. But
isn't the highest paid defensive player currently right now in the NFL? Right? That's what I read.
I assume so.
Yeah, he is.
I guess I couldn't.
In any
close, J.J. Watt would be the second closest.
Yeah, he's definitely second closest. And that's what I was getting to is that, I think they paid Sue specifically for his stats. I was just seeing something, and the last five seasons, he's number one in four different categories for, I think it was sacks, QB hits, rush. I mean, he has shown that he's been a dominant force inside, but his attitude and everything. You cannot pay a guy with that kind of attitude $60 million. That is a shitload of money. He is worth a lot of your team now. He is the face of that franchise right now. And if he messes up, your whole organization messes up.
Yeah, Jiggly, you just said, with all that money being spent to Sue, how much money do you have left to pay other players? Pay other, draft picks? How much money do you have left?
I think you're going to be strapped for a while, which is why...
So it's just like,
he's a big piece of the pie. He really is. For the next 3 years, that's all that's their money. And that's a risky move. So it better pan out. He better not get fined and suspended all the time like he was doing in Detroit. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think it's really going to bite him in the ass.
Well, remember, we talked about this a while ago. It's one of the reasons why I'm not wearing a Dolphin shirt now is because of the organization and how they were too cheap. Now they go and they pay this guy $60 million. And it's like, okay, cool. You're trying to up your defense. You're trying to, get a player that's going to bring asses in the seats and get people fired up. Great. But that's it. That's all you got now. You're putting all your cash under one mattress, and that mattress is Sue. Mm-hmm. You better hope that guy pans out, man. You better hope he starts acting professional. Well, it's not but yeah. No, yeah. Start acting professionally.
He has not acted like a professional on the field. Well, not even on the field. When you're stomping on guys and it's absurd to give a guy that this kind of money.
He's been a force to reckon with for the last five seasons, but his attitude will get in the way.
Absolutely.
All right, there's a couple more high-profile ones I want to get to. I would say the most surprising of which, Jimmy Graham to Seattle. Who saw that coming?
Not me.
I don't even think the players
Clearly
saw
Drew
it
Brees
coming.
Didn't see it coming.
No one saw that coming.
It was literally on my phone, it was as of right now, the Saints are actively shopping big-name players. And then literally, 10 minutes after that, Jimmy Graham to the Seahawks. And I was like, what?
That officially gives Russell Wilson his first elite
truly
receiver.
Truly elite target, yes.
Truly elite target, I should say.
Yes.
He's a receiver, let's be honest. He's not a tight end.
He really
He's...
That's how they're going to line him up.
Yeah, exactly. That's dangerous to me. That's scary. Because if Russell Wilson can do what he's done the past couple of years with no elite receivers, with a guy who was working at Foot Locker 5 weeks before the Super Bowl. Like, come the hell on. Yeah, think about what he can do with Jimmy Graham. Frightening. Yeah, if you're – sorry, buddy, but if you're the 49ers, I'm frightened right now.
Well, not just the 49ers. Everybody.
Yeah, well,
everybody. Sure. The Rams, the Cardinals, everybody.
Right. Yeah.
That's terrifying. It's the worst thing that you got. No, not only re-signing Marshawn Lynch, now you got this dickhead in a Seahawks uniform.
And Kerry Williams.
The fuck. You know, this is the worst. Like, this is the worst situation. Like,
the moment I saw that he got signed, my immediate thought was, holy shit, Steve is gonna be livid,
super angry.
Oh man, that's, you know, I was thinking insane. Of something really funny when I thought of Jimmy Graham going to the team. You know, Everyone gave Seattle the hardest time for passing that ball at the end, and I just started thinking to myself. I was thinking to myself, what's the one pass play I would do? A fade route to Jimmy Graham. You know what I mean? Like, if they would have had Jimmy Graham, that's the one thing I would say. Yeah.
They did it when they lost.
So now you think about that way, though. Like, this is how more versatile they're getting, though. I mean, it's going to be now Jimmy Graham going on fade routes. I mean, and then you got Marshawn Lynch for another 2 years. He's still rocking it. That defense still going to be strong even without Maxwell. That's a scary team. And, that's just frightening.
And I hate Pete Carroll, but I got to give him credit because he's made Seattle a destination. He's made it a place where guys want to go.
Absolutely.
People want to go.
They want to go play for him. They want to go play for that franchise. They want to go play in Seattle. They want to play for that fan base. So,
oh, God, I can't wait for people to start leaving that team. I really can't.
Man. That's crazy.
Go, man. I'm sorry.
No, it's been a shit week.
It's been pretty bummer.
It's not easy wearing this shirt.
I was going to say, if you're a Niners fan, it's been...
Feels like a 150-pound weight.
I was going to say, it's tough to rock the red and gold.
But hey, I'm doing it.
You most certainly are.
Well, hey, if there's one thing you'd be happy about, it sounds like Seattle's going to have some in-the-locker-room problems. Because already Michael Bennett's come out and said, highly disrespectful to trade off Matt, you know, the center that they traded off.
Yeah, Max Unger.
Yeah, Max Unger, I think. Yeah, that's his name. I mean, I think there's going to be issues. I mean, they constantly on NFL Network, they were showing videos of Jimmy Graham mouthing off to a bunch of Seattle players. I mean, he's going to be shunned, I think, for a little while there. It's going to be hard for him, I think, to start, you know, getting along with all those guys. Because it sounded like Max Unger had a lot of respect in that.
Absolutely, yeah.
It sounded like he was very respected. He brought the team together. He was the kind of the morale guy.
Which is what you want out of a center, like John Sullivan for the Vikings.
He's a leader, absolutely. So.
Yeah, and then... Jesus, apparently my Indianapolis Colts just decided to put it all out there, and apparently we want to just go for the Super Bowl.
You
want to
beat the Patriots.
Immediately. Yeah. We just want to beat the Patriots, apparently,
the time
so
is
bad.
Now. Strike while the iron's hot. You got to the AFC Championship game with, I mean, no disrespect, with a really good offense, but with a highly mediocre defense and a highly mediocre run game. And
yeah. And
if
now,
you can get that far, why not just plug in some more weapons and see if you can bring that bad boy home?
Exactly. And, I mean... Signed Frank Gore to a 3-year deal.
It's a great pickup for Andrew Luck.
Signed Andre Johnson to a 3-year deal.
Who fills the void for the Reggie Wayne veteran.
Exactly.
I mean, it really does. I mean, you get experience in there, teach those young guys something.
And it's super nice to have him in there to work with Daron Carter, who we grabbed
absolutely.
A couple weeks ago. And also,
that's the
my favorite semi-breakout from last year, which is Dante Moncrief.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited
Andre
about
Johnson.
These two guys.
Dante Moncrief, T.Y. Hilton, who you got in tight end? You've got Dwayne Allen,
Kobe
Fleener, Frank Gore.
Hopefully,
shit, man.
Hopefully Ahmad Bradshaw.
It's gonna be really tough to
as our third down back. Like,
it's so, gonna be really. Let, tough
let,
to be
let, let me
so
say
excited.
Something about Frank Gore, just
so
my
excited.
Own, like, you know. Okay, so how many players from the Niners over the years, like Ronnie Lott, you know, Joe Montana, you know, Jerry Rice, they all went on to wear other teams' uniforms? I don't care. I'm actually happy that he's going to get the money he wants because you know what? You mentioned earlier, you know, life after football. Frank Gore's not getting commercials or, you know, ads or anything like that.
No.
So he's doing
never
what,
been a stop.
Like, listen, the Niners didn't want to pay him the money he asked for. You know what? You know, whatever. That's their issue. I'm happy for him that he's going to get the money, frankly, he deserves because he is a tank. But not only that, he's getting a legitimate shot
at a title,
which is something he does deserve.
Very much so.
And it kills me to say this, but if he were to stay with the Niners, he's not getting it. He's not getting it in two or three seasons. However, he signed for 3 years, right? With the
three
Colts.
Years, yeah.
He's not getting that in 3 years with the Niners. So you know what? He has the right to pursue not only the money that he deserves, but the opportunity to cap off his career with a possible ring, at least another Super Bowl appearance. He only has one, right? The one with Harbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The Harbaugh Bowl.
Yeah, so that's the only one he has.
The best chance. I guess as a question for a Colts fan.
Sure.
If I'm a Colts fan, super fired up. Super happy about the spending money, bringing in guys, bringing in weapons. Yeah. All that's great. At the end of the day, though, the reason why you guys have not been able to advance any further the last couple seasons is the inability to stop the run.
Yes.
There has not been. I don't know how much money you guys.
Trent Cole, baby. I'm hoping that's.
Is that what you're thinking? I don't know who they're targeting in the draft.
No, I mean we already got Trent Cole.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see that.
Yep.
With all the other shit going on, I didn't even see it. I saw Haloti Ngata ended up going to Detroit, and he's a great run stopping defensive tackle, nose tackle. So I didn't know who was still available. Trent Cole, that is a good deal for you guys.
I'm really excited about that. I'm actually
a linebacker, right?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Who? Trent Cole's a linebacker.
Yeah.
I think he's a run stopper, but
I think he could I think he's a little versatile. I think he could play D end and linebacker. Okay. I'm pretty sure. Gotcha. Yeah. He's one
I'm really excited. I'm also very cautiously optimistic about it. Because these guys are all over 30 and signing three guys right in a row like that who are all on the back ends of their career definitely makes me a little nervous, only from the fact of, like, that's when you start to be very injury prone in your
career. I would
be
super nervous about it, except for the fact that you already got T.Y., Dante, and Colby, and Dwayne Allen. I believe Colby and Dwayne are still relatively young, are they not? A guy like Andre Johnson, even if he's not on the field, you've got, I mean, not to mix my sports here, but you've got the KG effect. You got a guy that's going to bark at young guys.
Yep.
It's going to be like, hey, man, this is what you need to do on that route. This is where you need to be. This is where Andrew Luck needs you to be. If you're going to go get that ball, you need to get up and go get that ball. And that is huge for guys, young guys like Moncrief, like T.Y. Hilton. I would be certainly, certainly terrified of Indy next year.
He's going to teach Dante how to run something besides
a go route.
All Dante knows how to do is run the go route.
Run as fast as he can in a straight line and catch an Andrew Luck bomb. Yeah. So, no, Indy, if I had to pick, I'm not going to lie, my early Super Bowl favorites, I would say Indy and Seattle.
Oh, Jesus, that already makes me nervous.
I'm nervous just saying that.
I'm nervous just
Indy,
you guys
Green
saying
Bay,
that.
Indy, Seattle, but I'm not going to lie. I think Indy's making the moves that will put them in the conversation to beat. I mean, at the end of the day, the only thing Indy really, really, truly, truly needs is a defense, specifically a run-stopping defense. And I
want to beef up that offensive line, too.
Yeah.
I want Andrew Luck to not be the most sacked quarterback for, like, the third year in a row.
Yeah, even when you guys had Peyton Manning, that old line was always small.
Suspect.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time we didn't have one of the most...
powerhouse kind of O-line.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time we had a powerhouse O-line. Yeah. But
when you went to the Super Bowl, I would guess, when you had Jeff Saturday anchoring that bad
guy down. Yeah. I guess that would be it. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this season.
I'd be super pumped if I was an Indianapolis Colts fan right now.
Tough division, but I mean, I think they definitely got the best chance. So.
Fuck Seattle.
All right. So that's gonna mostly do it for NFL free agency so far. There were a couple other small ones, like Brian Fitzpatrick to the Jets. Woo!
Big move, New York, and
replacing Ryan Fitzpatrick, of course, we've got Brian Hoyer going to the Texans.
He got a lot more money than I thought he would, though.
He got too much money to be part of a system of like three quarterbacks that will probably all start at some point during this next
also
season.
Also losing his what was their number one passing target, Andre Johnson. I mean,
it's so weird. The Texans are just weird.
Like,
the
I'm so excited, weird, right? And then Jackson leaves.
Hey, I get to come through this. Oh, he's gone.
It's
like seeing him in a revolving door.
Yeah, right, he's about to shake the hand all of a sudden. Yeah.
The revolving door effect. You see him coming out as you're going in.
Shit, I didn't want to sign here.
That's funny. All right, well, that's going to do it for NFL free agency. I wanted to spend a good amount of this episode, since we've got the Willers brothers both in the hot seat here, I'd like to spend a lot of time just talking Minnesota sports, because as much as Drew and I talk individually about Minnesota sports, I don't feel like we ever concentrate any episodes toward like one person's hometown teams, and I feel like
totally down with it.
I feel like now that we have two Minnesota guys in the room, I feel like now is a perfect time to do it. Sure. So let's start with Twins baseball.
Okay.
Let's get into that. We don't have to get super, super into it because obviously the season hasn't started. We're only in spring training. But I wanted to spend a few minutes on a guy I know you adore but are also very not happy with right now. I believe you're wearing his shirt, actually. That'd be Mr. Joe Mauer.
Midway Joe.
You were not happy. So if you guys don't know, Joe Mauer last season was moved from out behind the plate to first base. It was his first season playing anything but catcher. It did not go well. Four homers and I believe 55 RBIs, and that's not something you want to see from your stud.
Well, more importantly, I mean, I've gotten over the fact, and I don't know about you, I've gotten over the fact he's not going to hit for power.
No, yeah.
He's not going to hit for power.
I gave up on that long.
No, exactly. The year that he won the AL MVP, flash in the pan. Mm-hmm. It was great. It was beautiful. It was glorious. We're never going to see more than 20 homers from him ever again. We're never going to see that kind of scoring potential with him. The main thing with Joe, the reason why you like Joe, the reason why you pay Joe, is for him to bat 320, to get on base, to be a table setter. To be honest with you, I don't even think he should be hitting from the three spot anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't think he should be. I'm not saying
Where do you want him to hit?
Two. I think you get whoever speedy du jour center fielder you get lining up batting leadoff, mm-hmm. and then you slide Joe in at second to either move him along and get on base himself, and then you throw a couple big boppers behind him to bring him home. Joe's never going to be one of your long ball hitters. The fact that you moved him out from behind the plate and told us that you did it so you could keep him on the field more and to keep him healthy more, and it still didn't happen.
Yeah.
He was still broken down in his hurt.
He still missed, broken. 40 games?
He missed a lot. Games.
I mean, yeah.
He missed way too much for a guy who gets paid that much.
Yeah. And it's not, and that's the thing. The thing that drives me nuts about it is it's like, it's not even super major injuries. And I understand the grind of baseball. It is 162 games. People don't realize with the traveling, the bus traveling you do, all that, I get that it's a grind. Guys need nights off. The best guys need nights off.
Absolutely.
I totally get that. But when you're telling me you're missing 3-4 consecutive games in a row, huge gaps of a season because you have bilateral leg weakness?
Yeah.
Come on!
It almost just sounds.
What the
up.
Hell is this?
That's what I said when Drew told to me last year. He's like, he's got bilateral leg weakness.
Is
I was
that
like,
a cramp?
That's not. Is that real? Can I use that to get out of work?
Well, our dad was just like, I swear to God, I've been working with bilateral leg weakness since I started working shifts in the ER my whole life. He can play baseball.
I'm sure he
that.
Gets bilateral weakness when he's on like mile 22 of a marathon.
Absolutely,
I mean, it's insane. It's just like
you're getting paid that kind of money. It's frustrating.
It's one of the craziest quote-unquote injuries I've ever heard of.
It almost just seemed like he was just losing his faith in the team. I mean, it just seemed like that whole team was crumbling, and he just basically didn't want much to do with it. I mean, like, it sucks. Like, it really sucks. Like, he was just not in there enough to really do anything. I mean, my God, we give him a lot of money. It's insane.
Well, I'm also super pissed at the front office. Mm-hmm. You're thumping that drum of, you just need to, you know, only thing we need from you as taxpaying fans is to help us build a new stadium. Once we get a new stadium, we're going to put a product on the field that you can be proud of. And we're going to be competitive again. And we're going to compete for World Series and pennant titles. And we're going to run the AL Central.
Nope.
We opened up Target Field, had one good year, took first round trip out against the Yankees, per usual. The last four seasons, 90-plus losses. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
And if you look at our pitching rotation, who do we have? Carl Pavano.
Garbage.
Ricky Nolasco.
Garbage.
Phil Hughes panned out, so I'm not gonna give him too much of a hard time. But yeah, good for him. But then you got Scott Diamond.
Who?
Landfill.
Exactly. You got Scott Diamond, and then you've got
Did you say landfill?
It's just a landfill.
I mean, it's
awful.
Just like in the bullpen. I'm so happy about the bullpen because the bullpen is young and exciting, and you got Casey Fien, who's a great setup guy, and
You think you finally found your closer, your best closer since Joe Nathan and Glenn Perkins. Once you decided, hey, you know what? He's not going to be a starter, but he's got a great fastball. He could probably close. But when the bullpen has to come in the fourth inning every other day, I mean, they just don't have any juice. And no, you need your bullpen left. Down the stretch.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's no, just... that's the big thing. You need it down the stretch. And, I always have a lot of respect for the Twins because, like, they never... You know, because they have a lot of faith in their farm leagues. They like to bring guys up, give them the opportunity. But lately, it just doesn't fucking work. And then you know, like, you see these teams, like, even out in Los Angeles, you got the LA Dodgers, you got the Angels. I mean, you got these teams just throwing money down. Spending money. And yes, maybe you call the Chiefs. Like, when I was younger, I hated the Yankees because they spent their money. But you know what? They won. They gave their fans something to be proud of. Right now, I'm not proud of the Twins at all. I'm not proud of anything they've done. They have done nothing for me. Nothing at all. I mean, we paid a lot of tax money to give them a stadium. They've done nothing in there. It's time to start spending money and getting people in there that are going to perform.
And fans are still going.
It's amazing
That's
how fans still go.
That's the sad part.
Yeah.
Fans are still showing up every single week.
Mm-hmm.
Target Field is packed. Only near the end of last season... did ownership start recognizing, oh, ticket sales are starting to drop off.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we suck.
Oh, we're not doing so hot. We should probably start spending some money on some guys. So, I mean, I'm a little bit more, as you said about the Colts, cautiously optimistic. That's what I would say about the Twins this year.
Yeah.
New manager in Paul Molitor.
I'm excited about
that. That's what I wanted. That was the next question I wanted to ask. So I know Paul Molitor, he finished his career out with you guys. Mm-hmm. I believe he played like his last three seasons with you guys.
Yep.
What do you guys, I don't know honestly much about this guy. What do you guys think about him?
Well, it sounds like right off the bat, he's going to be no nonsense, which is a breath of fresh air. It was a breath of fresh air to get on the football side of things last year with the Vikings. You go from Leslie Frazier to Mike Zimmer. Now you're going from Ron Gardenhire to Paul Molitor. Know that Paul Molitor is obviously HOF, Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent hitter. We desperately need to figure out ways to get guys on base.
How to get people on base,
But more importantly, the thing that made Twins baseball when we were growing up from about 2000 to 2010, what made it so exciting was the fact that they were so defensively sound.
Yeah.
From position to position.
Torrey Hunter, Robin, home
runs. But even beyond that, you had Nick Punto doing the dirty work. You had Doug Minkiewicz. You just had guys that knew how to play their position defensively without making mistakes.
Radke too.
Brad Radke was a pitcher, but
he
was sound at what he did. Mm-hmm. And now, the last few seasons, it's like, really? Like, base running errors. I had never seen that out of a Twins baseball team before.
Mm-hmm.
Guys not going, like, on two outs, not running all out. These are little things you need, as a professional baseball player, you need to do. So the fact that the very first thing that Paul Molitor did in his, I think it was the first or second spring training game, he benched center fielder Aaron Hicks. And he benched him because he didn't run all out. He forgot how many outs there were and didn't run all out. Benched him.
That's fantastic.
I was like, absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Gardenhire wouldn't have done that. Gardenhire would have pulled him aside.
I don't think most managers would do that in the first or second game of spring training. I think they'd chalk that up to it's been a while since you've been on the field, and I think it's great Molitor.
You can do that with a team that's actually good, but when you let guys who have been playing lousy for years, mm-hmm. let them keep doing that, it doesn't do you any favors. Which is why, like, I have a lot of respect for Gardy. I think he did a lot of great things in his tenure with us, but the fact of the matter is that we needed a kick in the ass, and he was not doing the kicking. He just wasn't.
Yeah. I just think after a while, when a guy's been in an organization for a while, his song gets a little old. No matter how many ways he tries to sing it, it just gets old. And I don't think, especially the young guys we have, because like Jake said, we got some exciting guys coming up in the minor league system.
We got some kids, and that's what I want to talk about here in a minute. I'm excited.
I just think that what it boils down to, like, Molitor is putting restrictions on cell phone use. You can't have your cell phone out 30 minutes before game time.
Yep. He's very interesting.
He's setting very strict parameters on how he wants his clubhouse to be. and I'm super excited for it.
That's really cool.
I'm super excited. I don't care. If they lose 90 games again, I'm not going to be happy about it. But if they're playing sound baseball, if they're playing competitive baseball, I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. I understand that it's still just going to take a little bit of time. We're probably not going to see our best prospects until the end of the year.
We won't see them quite yet.
I just want them to be competitive. I want starting pitchers to last 6 innings. I'm not even asking for 7. Just last 6.
Just compete.
Yes.
Just compete.
And that's the other thing. The AL Central, for the first time in the last however many years, is actually this year, now that Max Scherzer went and took all the money in Washington, it's actually pretty wide open.
It is. Yeah, I know. It's wide open.
So let's try to get after it a little bit.
Yeah, no, really. Let's just get a little crazy in the offseason. Let's try to pick up some guys. Let's try to, you know, make something, you know? I mean, it's just...
Finally paid for a pitcher worth seeing, Irvin Santana.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
A little on the old side, but...
Yeah, and then, the last thing, White Sox,
let's go ahead and take the AL Central.
Dude, if Jose Abreu takes another step forward, it's going to be really, really tough to pitch against the White Sox.
Yeah, I was just messing. We can talk about the White Sox anytime. I want to keep going on you guys. Yeah. I wanted to get into your acquisitions for the year. You got a couple of decently high-profile ones. Obviously, you got the return of Mr. Torii Hunter.
That was fun.
I'm definitely going to.
A division rival, like, that just excited me to see him, like, back in the division. Like, Torii Hunter has always been like a player that I've had an immense amount of respect for, and it's cool to see, like. Obviously, this is probably his last year.
Oh, yeah.
He's 39.
He signed a twin.
Yeah, he signed his 1-year contract. He's going to work. He's great. He's great to come in and mentor Byron Buxton, dude.
He's already barking. I've been reading articles every single day. He is on guys.
Yeah.
On them all the time. Just in there. It's really like the KG effect with the Wolves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you're not bringing him in thinking he's going to bat you 30
MVP
a home.
Yeah,
no, he's not going to be. He's not going to be Rob. He's going to play. He's going to do his job in right or left field, wherever, probably right field. But the main reason why you bring a guy like that in is to have the voice that you have in Molitor in a player.
Yeah.
A guy that's playing with you every day. That's not going to settle. I don't know anything about it, but I hope Aaron Hicks got his ass chewed out by not only Molitor, but I hope Torii Hunter was like, dude, this is big leagues. You gotta hustle.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta be paying attention. These are little things that pros do. Like, if you're not going full bore on two outs and you're on first, and that guy freaking muffs the ball out in center for whatever reason, you could score. But if you're not paying attention, you're probably only going to – you might advance to third if you're fast.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just little things like that. I'm super excited to have Hunter back.
Very excited.
I'm not expecting any kind of big numbers, not a lot of production.
Well, I wouldn't expect him – I'd expect him – I mean, I wouldn't expect him to play more than 100, 110 games.
Yeah, he's not going to play the whole season.
Especially, like, inevitably Byron Buxton is going to get called up.
Stay healthy.
Please
stay healthy.
As just a baseball fan, here's hoping that he does stay healthy, because I'm really excited to see him and Miguel Sano.
I really wanted to see them both last year.
And you should have. Honestly, you should have.
Sano got Tommy John in spring training
and you can't do anything about that.
And then Buxton Well, first it was Buxton's wrist, and then when he finally did get back on the field, he had a really freaking scary collision in center field.
Yes, that was
frightening. Was it a double-A game or a triple-A game?
A triple-A game.
Yeah, he was diving for a ball and smoked his head with with a teammate.
That was frightening.
That was scary.
That's scary.
I was like, okay, well, that's just how things are going in Minnesota sports land these days. But luckily, it was nothing serious.
I mean, at least it wasn't like a Justin Morneau where it's like one concussion could send him 100 games.
Yeah, sounds like both guys are 100% healthy. Hell, Sano's first game back
launched
a 400-foot bomb to left center. Just crushed it.
That's awesome.
It was awesome.
Destroyed.
I was like, I want to see that at the major league level so
You
bad.
Will. I'd be willing to bet a paycheck that you see both of these guys get called up within the first half of the season.
And that's the thing. That's why I'm like, you know what? Like, if we lose 90 games, it's not the fact that we're losing 90 games. Like,
it's how you're losing them.
Yes,
and that's the same. not to get into White Sox again, but it's the same with the White Sox. It's not that we're losing so much as it is that we're not putting up. It's funny that when you think about like the parallels of our two teams' successes, like we've always been rivals because we've always been on the same half of our division. Like we're either 1-2, like trying to go back and forth, or we're at the bottom trying to not be in last place.
Well, they're also 50 feet of crap. In
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But they're also, I mean, they mirror each other in the sense that, I mean, I've not been a super big White Sox follower, but most teams in the AL Central outside of Detroit that's just been throwing mad money at guys the last few years, outside of Detroit, the AL Central seems to pride itself on building through their farm leagues and building through their minor league systems and taking young guys and bringing them along. Like, for you guys, Alexi Ramirez.
Yep.
Like, great, great farm kid. Chris Sale. I remember watching Chris Sale coming out as a setup guy in the seventh inning one game, and I remember him freezing. This was Joe Mauer before Joe decided to be dumpy bad knees Joe and was still batting 320 Joe.
Yeah.
And he froze Joe Mauer with one of the nastiest 12-6 curveballs I have ever seen. And I said, that guy's going to be really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Really good.
That man's curveball is a fucking work of art. Good Lord. I just saw something under the ticker on ESPN earlier. He won't be starting opening day, which is to be expected. He'll be back April 12th, and I'm just like, damn. Just stay together for those like 12 days, guys, before Chris Sale.
Keep your shit together.
Yeah.
No.
Speaking, just going back to the Twins, your other big acquisition, Irvin Santana. Yeah. I like that.
That was actually huge. Yeah,
that's
finally
a huge pickup.
Finally, the front office was listening to the fan base. They were like, we want pitchers. We want arms.
He's a very talented
no,
pitcher.
No, absolutely. The only thing that bums me out about it is he's just a little bit. It's still a little bit too much money for me.
That's fair.
It is a lot of money to give a guy.
I mean,
like,
he's not. It's not like he's not 24, 25.
No,
like he's getting up there, so I completely understand where you're coming from with that.
He's older.
He's good, and the thing is, if he's pitching well by the midway point and we're approaching the trade deadline and things are going okay and you need to deal a guy, if things are going with, like, you could ship Irvin out the door for draft picks or prospects or something like
that.
It is a good pickup. It's a good pickup for more than just one reason.
Right.
I would like him to be around for
the foreseeable future.
Exactly. But if things, again, are looking like we're heading towards 90, 100 losses and he's pitching well, let's go get some more prospects.
Ship him out the door.
And that's something that I hadn't thought of. He could, as long as he's performing admirably before the trade deadline, you're right. He is someone that will be a coveted asset by certain teams, especially teams that are sort of in the same position as you guys were before acquiring him, which is we need a competent starting pitcher.
Yeah.
It's the perfect way to go get yourself a couple more prospects that can turn out to be guys like, hopefully, Byron Buxton and Miguel Sano are going to be.
I want
to
see those guys in Twins uniforms.
Again,
so bad.
Even me, just being a baseball fan, I want to see those guys.
Seriously,
in
a couple
uniform.
Years, I just want to see us beat the Yankees in the first round of the playoffs. That would be a dream.
Shit, dude,
true.
It might be a long shot for the Yankees to make the playoffs the next few years.
they're actually falling apart a little bit.
It's gonna be a tough road to hoe for them, but
it's gonna be an exciting season. As we're in the same division, I'm excited to see what you guys do. I'm excited to see, like, the talk about not, like, we haven't, like, our teams don't spend a lot of money. Talk about a team that spent a lot of money this year. The White Sox acquired a bunch of dudes.
They did, actually. Yeah.
Jeff Samardzija being probably, I would say, the most high profile acquisition.
Your girlfriend was talking about him earlier.
Yeah.
South Bend guy,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
I'm very excited about that. I've been following Jeff Samardzija for a long time, and I'm excited to see him in a White Sox uniform. But yeah, I'm really excited for what this season can bring. It's really hard, obviously, to predict right now, but if you had to predict for this 162-game season, just for fun, what's your prediction for a record?
I don't think we're going to lose 90 games. No. That's about as much as I want to say about
Below 500, but not that bad.
But I don't think it's going to be that bad. If all goes according to plan this season, Phil Hughes continues to pitch well. Irvin Santana continues to pitch well. You're not going to get a lot out of Hicks.
I still don't think you're going to get a whole heck of a lot out of Trevor Plouffe, especially in the field.
Could you win 85?
I think you're pushing it.
Yeah,
just a little bit.
Could you win 80?
Yeah, I think we can.
Yeah.
Oh, no, if
an 80-82 season?
If things go according to plan. If Joe stays healthy.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, an ideal situation, plan, could you win 80 games?
Yeah, absolutely.
Things have to go very, very well, I think, to hit the 80 win mark.
But I was not singing that tune
you were
last offseason.
Were you 70 and 92 last year?
Something like
72
that.
72 and 90, something like that?
Something like that.
I can't remember.
After a while, it just was like, fuck it.
Yeah. It's just like, they lost Christ. Again. Great.
I think picking up Irvin Santana, getting Torii Hunter back, if Sano and Buxton can come up, that's worth 10 games. That's a 10-game swing easily, in my opinion.
And that's the thing is, like, I want us to be in a place where we can be playing fun, competitive baseball with those kids coming up. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be the ideal for me. To have those kids playing baseball in a time where it can be relatively... like, because if they come up and we're already set to lose 95 or 96, they're not going to be having any fun.
No.
I want them to come into a situation where they can play competitive baseball and have fun with it.
Hopefully you can bring them up within the first 81 games. Like, in the first half of that season. Before the All-Star break, hopefully you can bring them up.
I'd be honest with you... I mean, I know you don't want to rush guys, but I'm just at the point now where it's like, if they're really that fucking good, like, if they're really that good, do we really need to wait that long? Like,
yeah, if they're that good
Buxton, from what I've heard.
You're talking about people are saying Buxton. We haven't seen a five-tool guy like Buxton since Mike Trout. I want to see that guy.
Everyone does.
Absolutely.
Everyone does.
I want to see him run. I want to see him catch. I want to see him hit. I just want to see the guy.
Yeah.
Me too.
Right.
So that's where I'm at with Twins baseball.
All right. Man, we got a lot more out of that than I was expecting. That was fun. I'm glad we got to talk some baseball. Let's shift gears. Let's talk a little more. Does Anthony Bennett know how to play basketball?
Oh, Jesus.
Or is that just a complete bust?
Dude.
Well, I've been shooting my mouth off for the last 5 minutes, but I just want to how did the...
I think the audience forgot you were here, Steve.
Steve! How was the Timberwolves game?
Timberwolves game was... The highlight of the game was watching Rob Gronkowski twerk on the Jumbotron.
Oh, right. I saw that.
That was the highlight of the game. Long story short, we get off the train. We are walking to the Yard House to grab a bite. And all of a sudden, an update pops up on my phone. And they say Kevin Garnett is not going to play tonight due to rest. And I just turned around and I looked at Jake and I went...
I was so pissed.
And I know, because like when I pitched the idea to Jake, I was like, hey, man, we could catch a Clippers-Wolves game Monday night. And he was like, yeah, that'd be sweet. We could see KG on the one last like reunion tour. That'd be awesome. I remember seeing him when we were kids. And I just turned around and went, so KG's not going to be there tonight? And he's
so
like, oh, shit.
That's such BS.
So, yeah, we go... I guess the one thing that really stuck out to me right off the bat at the Wolves game is that Zach LaVine has a lot of work to do.
A lot of talent to be molded.
There's a lot of talent on that team that needs to be molded.
No, for sure.
But I would say LaVine a lot.
Zach LaVine, mm-hmm. If here's the thing I don't understand, and I'm not going to question Flip Saunders, NBA Finals cred, championship cred, Minnesota cred, love the guy. He's one of our own. He's, you know, Twin Cities guy through and through. I do not know why he seems to insist on having Rubio on. Like, it seems like whenever he put, at least last night, when he put LaVine in, he'd take Rubio out.
Which is
like,
weird.
Like, LaVine would spell for Rubio. And I was like, why would you not want
both of those guys on the court at the same time. Because I'm sorry, LaVine does not know how to play point guard yet at the professional level. He looks lost. He looks confused. He does. He. My old high school basketball coach used to say all the time.
Sounds like me at a salad bar.
He said, my old high school, I hate you. My old high school basketball coach used to say, be quick, not in a hurry. Zach LaVine, when he's playing point guard, constantly looks like he's in a hurry. He rushes his decisions. He makes poor passes. He just doesn't. He doesn't know how to move without the ball if he's running the point. Zach LaVine, great athleticism. Super excited for him. That kid has got to figure out how to play point guard if that's what they want to do. I think it would be better suited to have him on the court at the same time as Andrew Wiggins and Ricky Rubio. I think that'd be super fun, fast-paced basketball. That's not what we saw the other night. No. I don't know if we didn't see it because KG was out, and that affected the way Flip did some lineups.
Why was he out?
KG?
Yeah.
Rest. Simply rest. Yeah. He's just old, broken down. I mean, he's even said, he's like, dude, I play 10 minutes of basketball now and I'm hurting. But he goes hard. He doesn't. I mean, when he's out there on the floor, he's just, A, he's old, but B, he plays at one level, and that's 100 miles an hour.
But so. I got to say, I mean, our big guys, if there's one thing I noticed that game, our big guys are just horrific. DeAndre Jordan made
a fool
out of all of our big guys. It didn't matter who we threw against him. It was terrible.
To be fair, garbage. Since Blake Griffin went out, DeAndre Jordan's been making a fool of pretty much everybody's big guys.
For sure, yeah.
But
so it's not completely a knock on your guys. It's just the fact that that dude's a freaking monster
right
now.
Absolutely, but the expectation
Get him on the
free
throw line, though.
I don't mean DeAndre Jordan. Like, I expect DeAndre Jordan to go all sorts of lob city on everybody. I don't care who you are. You cannot be giving up that many offensive rebounds.
Yeah, there's a lot.
The professional level, you can't be doing it. You can't give them that many second chance. You can't give Chris Paul that many second chance opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It's just obnoxious. And I'm excited for Adrian Payne. And I'm excited for Gorgui Dieng. Two big guys that have a lot of potential. But again, still learning. Yeah. Still getting things figured out.
Clippers worked us up and down. It was pretty obvious. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They've been working everybody up and down for a while now.
Color Steve and I wrong about the Clippers not being able to do anything without Blake Griffin.
But we did. We're worried. Well, we did say they would go to the playoffs.
Oh, you did.
We did.
I was
going to
say, they're making me look like an ass because I...
We certainly said they would not have an easy time, and they're having a mostly easy time right now.
Oh, dude. They were letting us have... I said, I was like, the first two games after they lost Blake Griffin, they looked like dumpster fire. Like, I mean, they
you have to adjust, man. It's like the Pacers. Like, Tyler was like, hey, the Pacers died, get their shit together. Yeah, because
now
they
we won six straight.
Yeah, so you
Rodney
have
Stuckey,
to.
Thank God.
When you're in those situations where you have to adapt or it's just straight down the toilet, then you'd be surprised what teams can do.
You probably give a lot of credit to Doc Rivers for that, too, to try to mold something different in that.
And that's exactly
time.
What
Very
Steve
true.
Said a couple weeks ago.
That's
he's
true.
Like, I'm a full believer that Doc Rivers is going to find a way to make it work.
That's what I would say.
And he's
that's
made it work
call.
With a very bad bench.
And you know
they have a bad bench.
You know what? I have to say, I haven't been following specifically. I haven't been following just Clippers ball as closely. Austin, and again, you're playing the Wolves, so. But Austin Rivers, is
he's had some good games.
He had a hell of a good game.
Was he coming off the bench? Yeah. I was gonna say that was probably their one bench player that came off and was like, oh shit. Yeah. Yep.
All right, but back to my original question:
Anthony Bennett.
Does Anthony Bennett know how to play basketball?
KG,
because
no,
I don't
not.
Think that he does.
No, KG's gonna kick that kid's ass. I'm a full believer that KG's gonna just. And that's the nice part about having him in there is to get these guys on like. He's already, I guess, just screaming at guys in practice. Rubio says that he is on everybody. If you're not back on defense in time, you're getting barked at.
Good.
Nonstop. Nikola Pekovic gets the worst of it, apparently.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Apparently, he gets just chewed out all
sure
the time.
Sure he does.
No,
I mean, watching him that night, I mean, really, for to be the muscle man of the group, to really be able to push guys around... There were times where, like, Nate Robinson was sneaking around.
Oh,
there.
Nate Robinson. That's
ridiculous.
The other thing. I was like, I like Nate Robinson.
Yeah, Nate Robinson.
Grabbing boards over Anthony Bennett, great.
Yeah,
game.
But Nate Robinson plays like a 6'9" dude.
This is true.
And he's like 5'7".
No, he does
he's
play
always
big.
Played big.
He's a crowd favorite too.
They love him in the Staples Center.
Center.
I couldn't believe it.
Even everybody, every team that's ever had Nate Robinson loves that guy.
Even Big Baby Davis or whatever, he was getting a huge.
Glenn was
He's another player that every team that's had him loves him. Like
I feel like is it me or did Nate Robinson and Glenn Davis end up on the same team like every single time? It feels
it
like they like moved
seems
together,
like it, right?
Right?
It certainly yeah. seems like it. One yeah. way or another, they end up on the same team.
Yeah.
Well, Nate's on a 10-day contract, right?
Is he right now?
As yeah. of right now, he'll probably
he'll get another
get
10.
Yeah,
he'll get
say,
another
he'll
10.
Probably get another 10 days. Wow. So no, it was no. It sucks, man. I was kind of excited for Anthony Bennett. You know, we picked him up, former first round draft pick,
former first
overall
draft pick.
He's struggling, man.
It sounded like, he, you know, in the offseason he was talking about how he had asthma problems, and he's got it figured out, so now, you know, he can move and be more agile and get up and down the floor a little bit better. Man, I don't see it.
I mean, say what you will about a lot of about NBA analysts with a lot of, like, their quote-unquote predictions. They were certainly right about not wanting to pick Anthony Bennett as the first overall pick.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very few analysts were into him as the number one overall.
Yeah.
And they were certainly right to think that way.
Paul Allen of Twin Cities K-Fan Radio was like, I don't, when we got Anthony Bennett, he was excited about the whole Kevin Love ordeal. He was excited about all of it, except for he was like, I don't see it with Anthony Bennett. I don't see it at all. He's right. They don't look super good. He doesn't look sharp. He just... The one thing I notice the most right now about the Wolves is there's... When guys don't have the ball, they're not moving. They're not cutting. Whereas, you know, you watch the Clippers, mm-hmm. and you've got J.J. Redick and Chris Paul and Austin Rivers running up and down the baseline, and they're cutting to the basket, and it's just like... And that's the way basketball's meant to be played. You have to move without the ball. You have to be hard to guard. You have to make it difficult on the defense. And the only way to do that is to cut and move. Unless KG's on the floor communicating and barking to guys, or in some occasions when Rubio's on the floor and barking to guys, mm-hmm. it's not happening. It's not happening. The only guy that seems to know what to do when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. Two guys. Andrew Wiggins has a good sense of how to cut and move without the ball. And Ricky Rubio. Kevin Martin doesn't cut a lot without the ball. Doesn't move a lot without the ball.
Yeah.
Zach LaVine certainly doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can go talk about all day about, you know, our big guys. I mean, our big guys are just not very good.
Oh, God. It was
I mean, they have potential. Adrian Payne hit some pretty sweet dunks and some pretty good plays. But... More often than not, he just didn't. He was not positioned very well defensively. He wasn't in a position to get rebounds. There's a lot of work that's going to need to be done the next few years if the Wolves are going to be
whatever coach they're planning on.
And they need to do it. And they need to do it quickly, or Toronto is going to get Andrew Wiggins. I'm calling it right now. If the Wolves don't find a way to get super competitive here in the next couple of years, I don't know how long Andrew Wiggins' rookie contract is going to last. 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not, I mean, we not only need to be above 500, we need to find a way to get well above 500, or he's gone. He's gone. I'm telling you right now, that kid's not going to waste his time.
Because he's
averaging 20 points now. He's going to take, you know, barring injury, he's going to take another step forward next year because he's just going to get stronger, smarter,
absolutely.
Faster.
Oh, yeah.
I just, if we don't find a way to be a truly competitive elite team in the West, a playoff team in the West in the next 3 years, Andrew Wiggins is gone, and I don't know what's going to happen with Timberwolves basketball after that, because fans are just getting tired. You can't pull KGs in to save your ticket sales every season.
3 years later, here comes Wally Zerbiak.
Exactly. Which is why I want KG just to own the team after this year or whenever he decides to be done with basketball. I just want him to own the team because I trust him to bring in. Because I feel like having him a part of ownership, like young guys recognize him.
Oh, no
you
doubt.
You know, they're going to be like, that's KG. I grew up watching that guy. I'll go play for him.
Yeah.
And he's a presence. Like, he's a presence in a locker room. I'm sure he'd be a presence in free agent signings. Long story longer, if the Wolves don't get really good here in the next 3 years, Andrew Wiggins is packing his bags and he's going to his hometown in Toronto, Canada to hang with his boy Drake.
And you won't be able to blame him either.
I know.
Absolutely not.
Dude, KG stuck around the Timberwolves a lot longer than he had to, and I'm shocked he even came back. I love that dude. But Wiggins is going to be gone even faster if they don't find a way to be competitive.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. I want to spend a few more minutes talking. Let's finish up with the Vikings, man. Oh, you guys got Sean Hill.
Yeah, man. He's back. Thank Everybody's God. Coming home Thank in Minnesota.
We'll see how it works out for him, Cotton.
let me ask Jake something because I've been wanting to ask him something for a while here. All right. So when I first started hanging out with Drew, we talked about, you know, what it was like when Brett Favre signed with the Vikes and how he felt.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel?
My first initial reaction was the straight fuck? Like, what? Like, really? Like, Brett Favre? Because, like, when it first happened, everyone was like, I think they were talking to Chris Carter, some of the old Viking alums, and they talked about how, I mean, they used to put number 4 on dummies and hit that thing as hard as they could. So to have him come there in purple, it was like, I didn't see in the grand scheme of it, I didn't see that, you know, he was going to work with the coaching staff really well. I truly did not see the potential talent that we had. I saw Adrian Peterson, but I didn't see like Sidney Rice or anything like that, or Shanko at that time. But Brett Favre brought that all out in them and made it unreal. But yeah, my first initial reaction was just like, why? Like, what? Yeah. Like, seriously, this is what's happening now? We're getting an old fart like that who just tanked with the Jets. I don't know. It was.
So you weren't on board with it right away?
No. But when we started winning, absolutely. Yep, I was stoked. That was the best years of football I watched.
I was going to say.
It was the best years.
Outside of 98, 99.
When he fired that dart, was it against the
Niners?
And just.
I've seen the replay.
I mean, the Metrodome just exploded. Mm-hmm. Everyone's minds exploded. This old guy just coming in here, firing, just dominating. And I don't know how many times I rewatched them beat the Packers, like maybe like 50 times.
Well, I downloaded it on
my iPod.
We were watching it. I came home from winter break and we were just watching it.
We were going to Willer's Christmas and we were watching the first half.
That's awesome.
Oh, man.
The cool thing about that when the. What's it called? The Minneapolis Miracle? Is that what it
called? Yeah, that's what Paul Allen called it. That's what Paul Allen called it? Miracle.
Well, you know how like Brett Favre has the name? Like, you know, he was a spray and pray quarterback. After, I guess, I did some research just out of curiosity.
And not just when he was on the field.
No!
Well,
zing, I like it.
Aaron Andrews can testify to that one. But anyway, so I did some research as to what he said afterward. Like, oh man, I knew it. Like, you know, I just knew that I was going out. He's like, no, actually, to be quite honest with you, I just saw a shade of purple down there, and I just let it go. It's like
when you know Greg Lewis got signed literally that week. He got picked up.
It's his first catch, right?
He got picked up. He actually was not supposed to play, but on the last drive, we were running hurry up, and Favre had us rolling down the field. Well, Percy Harvin had a hell of a game like he usually did. Returned to kick that game. He's gassed. Needed a spell. Goes to the sideline. At that point, the coaching staff and Favre, and really the whole offense, was like, you know what? This play, particular play right here might not be the play, but we'll have another shot right after. We'll have one more shot. So they just threw in Greg, and Favre basically just... I guess from what I've heard, basically just did like the draw it up in the dirt like a playground. He was like, all right, you two guys are doing this. You two guys are doing this. If you catch it and you don't score, get out of bounds. If you catch it and score, I'll love you forever. And sure as shit, Greg Lewis ran a 9. Well, it was like a pseudo kind of 9/banana route. And just kind of once he got to the back of the end zone, just curled off. And like you said, Brett broke the pocket and just saw a purple shirt and was like, I'm going to put it right there. Holy shit, that was a hell of a good throw.
It was unreal.
But Brett even said, you could say good throw, good catch. Either way, that's a hell of a good catch. That's the best catch.
Because it was like what, like a millimeter from being out of bounds?
Oh my God, he's towing that line. But you can clearly see. I mean, he's clearly in bounds. He clearly scored. That was a hell of a good time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jake, so.
Oh boy.
I've been since the day I moved out here, pretty much, I've been friends with your brother. And there's no better memory I have, I would say, than this past year's NFL draft. I'm sure you've probably heard the story from your brother's mouth, but I'm not sure you've heard the story from a witness's mouth. So we're sitting there watching the NBA. Oh wow! Excuse me.
I was watching.
Steve's watching the NBA because the Miami because the Heat were playing. But we're sitting there watching the beginning of the NFL draft. And all that day we had been talking. There had been obviously there was a lot of hype last season about Mr. Johnny Football.
Yeah.
And the weeks prior, Drew and I had been talking like, oh, what if he goes to this team? What if he goes to this team? And then projections started putting him somewhere around the Vikings, and we were sort of like, well, what?
You were.
What if the Vikes grabbed Mr. Johnny Manziel? And the whole time, your brother's just like, oh, man, that would be awesome. That'd be so cool. That'd be so cool. So we're sitting there. We're having a few beers at the bar watching the NFL draft. Yep. And it gets to, I believe, pick 14.
Mm-hmm.
Manziel's still on the board.
No, we were pick 9.
Pick 9. Pick 9.
We took Anthony
Meyer. You're right. You're pick 9. It gets to pick 9. He misses the Browns the first time, right?
Yep.
Which is, I believe, like where we thought he was going to go initially anyway.
Yeah, that's what
he misses the Browns, and as soon as he misses the Browns, your brother just stands up, circles our table, and just goes, oh my God, we're getting Johnny Football. We're getting Johnny Football. He high-fives me like 3 times, and I'm like, all right, dude, calm down. Calm down. The pick's about to be in. With the 9th pick in 2014 NFL Draft, the Minnesota Vikings select Anthony Barr.
That's despondent.
He doesn't say a word.
I walked out.
I remember that.
He doesn't say. You didn't walk out. You didn't walk out yet. So he doesn't say a word.
Yeah, you're pretty upset.
We get down to pick 22. It's the Browns again. 22nd pick in the NFL Draft. Cleveland Browns select Johnny Manziel, quarterback, Texas A&M. Then your brother starts losing his mind a little bit. And then we get all the way down to pick 31?
32.
With the 32nd pick, the Minnesota Vikings select Teddy Bridgewater, quarterback, Louisville. Your brother sprints out of the door of the bar and just runs down the street for about 3 minutes, circles back around, runs back. He is despondent. He is absolutely losing his mind, just screaming, why didn't we take Manziel? Why would we take Teddy Bridgewater? He had a terrible pro day, blah, 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 blah. And Steve and I are just laughing our asses off. Steve and I are losing our minds. We're laughing so hard.
Super pissed.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen your brother do. But I want to hear your side of it. What was your reaction? You pass up Manziel, you take Anthony Barr, Cleveland takes Manziel, and then you guys take Teddy Bridgewater. What was going through your head in that probably 45-minute span?
Everything that went around in my head. Because, like, everything up before the draft, Drew was trying to get me so fired up about Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
But there was always something holding me back. There was always his size.
Mm-hmm.
What every analyst was saying. I mean, like, he just was not NFL ready.
His douchiness.
Yeah. Dad wanted nothing to do with
him. Nothing would do with him.
Scott Wilson wanted nothing. Oh, I was talking with
Johnny
dad.
Football?
Oh, no, my dad was like, I don't want to have anything to do with that guy.
In the draft, I actually wanted David Carr. I actually liked him a lot. He had a very athletic arm. He could throw.
Derek Carr.
Yeah. Sorry. Derek Carr. He could throw the ball deep. He actually proved to be very. I didn't think we were going to get Blake Bortles, so I thought, okay, we're going to get Carr. Carr's got a good arm. He showed a pretty impressive pro day. I thought that's what who was going to be. And always in the back of my mind, I always liked Teddy. I always was like, you know,
I was super high on Teddy. I remember showing your brother some highlights of Teddy.
But the pro day went so bad, poorly. And the media just absolutely took it and they crumbled him, and really sold him out of a top 10 draft pick. I mean, if the news doesn't react the way they do, then the fans wouldn't have gotten all, you know, against Teddy, and he probably would have been drafted top 10. So Vikings should actually be very blessed that he had a shitty pro day, because
awesome.
That's how we got. That's how we were able to get Anthony Barr in our hands, which At first, I had no idea who the hell Anthony Barr was. I heard that he was a linebacker. I heard he was very gifted.
Paul Allen called it the day of. Mm-hmm. Paul Allen called it. He said at number nine, we're taking Anthony Barr.
Yeah. I didn't know much about him, but, I mean, obviously he worked out. You know, if he didn't, you know, get the injury, he probably would have been Defense Rookie of the Year.
Yeah,
definitely. So, yeah, when that pick came in, I was saying Carr, get Carr. Don't get Manziel. Because I thought Manziel was too much of a gamble at number nine. It was way too much of a gamble. I thought,
without a doubt.
I thought if anything, I thought maybe we would trade down and then we would get Johnny. But at nine would have been way, way too risky. So, I mean, I was happy with Barr. I wanted Carr at first, honestly. And then once we got Teddy in the 32nd pick, I was very satisfied with that. Because I'm like, even if he is a bust, he's only the 32nd pick. I mean,
we already got
our Anthony Barr, our big name linebacker. Now, if we just get a quarterback that, you know, like, you know, we'll live with or without at 32. Like, we'll survive if it goes bad. Like, not everyone's going to hate us in Minnesota.
It was low risk from the simple fact that you did get that cushion by having a very, very high first round draft pick and then, you know, the last first round draft pick. You guys lucked out a little bit this past draft class by having that. It's really nice.
And we needed a good draft class, especially after now, like, you see where the direction Cordell Patterson is taking and what we traded for to get him. Mm-hmm. I even told you when that happened that if that fucks up, that's on Spielman. That's on him big time if that does not work out. And if it doesn't work out right now, like it's not, I'm pretty pissed about it. We gave up a lot for Cordell Patterson to have an attitude and not understand the playbook.
And not know how to run routes.
And not how to do shit. Yeah, I mean, he's athletic. I'll give him that.
Of course, but you can't run jet sweeps every single play of every single game.
That's amazing.
Really quick, I know he's heard this. Tell the story of what you heard about Cordell Patterson going on a date with...
I don't know if this is 100% true, but...
It's true.
I was partying with a guy, and he was telling me about what Cordell Patterson does for his nightlife. And it consists of a lot of chasing after U of M girls. But he apparently went on a date one time. And you have to understand that Cordell Patterson's...
Went to tech school for a year before he decided to stop in Tennessee.
He was uneducated. I think Tennessee had to fudge his numbers a little. But
understatement of the year.
Yeah, probably. No, but he's at a place and he's looking at some food, and I guess there was something he wanted, but he had no idea what it was. Now the normal thing to do would be ask a waiter, ask a waitress, hey, what is this, and explain it to me. No, he calls his agent and asks him how to pronounce this for him and asks him if it's any good. On a date.
In front of the girl.
In front of a girl.
He's like, hey, should I order this? I don't know what it is.
If I was his agent, I don't know what I'd probably just hang up the phone.
I feel like that same transaction goes on with him and Greg Jennings on the sideline. He's like, hey, should I run that route? Is that the right route? Should I run that?
Yeah.
Cordero, that's in the opposite direction. Not run that.
Cordero, what are you doing with the fucking defensive playbook? Put that thing down. Yeah, that's not yours.
Or he's got the
Where did you get the Packers playbook?
Or he's got the Madden, like, special teams playbook. Like, it says I gotta turn or go for it. And like, that's kickoff, dumbass. All right, grab the next one.
That's kickoff left. You do not run that.
No, but yeah, but to come back to the draft, yeah, I was definitely at that time hoping for Carr.
He had to talk me down for a while.
Yeah.
Well, Carr,
I had to talk you down.
There was a lot of talking down.
They do that. They both have a lot of heart and a lot of resilience.
They do.
They do. I mean, they keep playing and keep playing their hearts out.
They kept chugging.
And now I believe, you know, you and I had a lengthy conversation a couple months back. I believe you're pretty satisfied with the way Teddy worked out this first year.
I am very satisfied. And it makes me appreciate so much more how Norv Turner and Mike Zimmer stuck to their guns when the draft came along, because everyone after that was saying, Teddy, no, don't touch Teddy. But Norv Turner, Mike Zimmer kept coming out and saying, no, he's got talent. We believe in this guy. And then when Mike Zimmer went to Johnny Manziel's thing, and, you know, Manziel's just firing off deep bombs.
Playing Drake in the background.
Yeah, he's dancing
like
around
a boss.
And stuff. Yeah. Zimmer goes, I just felt like the whole thing was staged. I didn't see it was that impressive. I felt like they really set it up.
It was a spectacle, not an actual pro.
Well, everyone was just, their minds were exploding. Zimmer was just like, hey, reality check. I mean, come on.
But Zimmer did say,
according to Peter King of Sports Illustrated, Zimmer and general manager Rick Spielman and offensive coordinator Norv Turner did sit down with all three, well, I guess technically four big-name quarterbacks, the franchise guys, and they said, Zimmer did say that he really liked the way Manziel presented himself, that Manziel was like, but I guess this was talked about a couple months back, Manziel was this way with every team that he
clearly
to.
It was an act
that he did a really good job of talking to his front every front office, every assistant. But he basically looked Zimmer in the eyes and said, "If you draft me, we're gonna ruin this league and we're gonna win Super Bowls."
Yeah, ruin this league. Yeah. Indeed,
ruin this team.
No,
ruin team myself. Yeah.
The moment I saw Johnny Manziel in downtown Cleveland life with a rolled up $20 bill on an Instagram photo to the public, I was like, "Thank God for Teddy." Thank God, because that was just a dumpster fire the moment I saw that photo.
And moreover, thank God to the media for overreacting to a fucking pro day. I think there's too much stock put in pro days. And you can agree or disagree with that. I could Colin Cowherd all over this fucking topic for 45 minutes. Pro days, there's too much stock in combines. There's too much stock in pro days.
Last year, that was my lesson. Yeah. Last year was my lesson. I will look at pro days. I will take pro days into consideration. It wasn't until after we actually drafted Teddy that I really sat down and watched his game tape. And while everybody, like you said, while everybody was like, no Teddy, don't touch him, he is not your guy, there was one analyst who I really, really like, Matt Miller of Bleacher Report, super high on him. Thought he was absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, no question in his mind, the best possible quarterback you could take in this draft. And when the Vikings took him at 32, Matt Miller said, that's the steal of the draft. That is going to be the... And he even said, he was like, that might be the steal of the next four or five drafts. He was like...
And you remember what I said from the beginning. I was high on him, too.
I showed 100%.
You. I sent you highlight tapes. I was like, this kid can ball, and he might take a year or two or three, but eventually this kid... He understands how to play football, and he looks like he can play on a professional caliber level.
Well, yeah, in this game, too. I mean, really, you look at it, and you saw Ponder in the way – you could say, like, Ponder didn't learn anything, but if anything, you could say that he was taking very, very slow steps. I mean, it only took Bridgewater one season – less than one season to actually see some improvement on a lot of different fields.
It took him five games to really like start figuring things out. And those first five games, they were rough.
He didn't crawl
especially in the red zone.
He didn't
Red zone, and even to the end of the season, he still got a lot of red zone work to do. But you saw, well, you didn't see the end, but I saw, and I'm sure you did, Jake. You saw the final few, that fourth quarter of that Dolphins game.
Yeah.
Teddy looked like he had been doing that for 5 years.
He just did it no problem.
Yeah.
He did it no problem whatsoever.
And unfortunately, your defense couldn't hold it together.
Which was so weird because they were whooping that ass for three straight weeks.
But I'm sitting on the couch and you're at the game.
I was at the game, yeah.
You were out and I'm sitting here with our buddy Blake, and every time, like, I'm just watching Teddy just be so proficient in the red zone in that fourth quarter, and I just look at Blake and I'm like, this is what I was saying from the beginning. This is what this kid can do, and I knew it. I watched him at Louisville. I knew that he had this in him. It was just about finding timing with his receivers and just learning an NFL, a pro-style offense. Like, it's...
And honestly, you know...
And he will, mark my words, he will be an infinitely better quarterback than anyone in that draft class.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I think, well, I mean, if Bortles gets the right weapons, I think that he could be something special.
We'll see with Julius
Thomas.
He's
got one now. He's got
Julius.
We'll see. I'm not convinced.
Yeah. I'd said to you, you know, before the Julius Thomas deal happened, I was like, let's just send freaking AP to Jacksonville. Now I'm like,
if you send him to Jacksonville.
I don't want to send him there.
Hey, he's still in my division. Let's not give him too many weapons. Yeah,
actually, well, let me tell you guys, I don't know if I told you this, but when I actually went to that Dolphins Vikes game, I was with my cousin, it was his birthday, and I was also with my buddy Charlie, the guy I mentioned earlier. Anyway, so we're watching the Vikes play. These are guys who don't really give out compliments often, okay? But we were, I'd say probably in the midway through the third quarter. And we were watching the game, obviously watching Teddy do what he does, watching Tannehill, yada, yada, yada. And I turned to my cousin, and I said, man, I was like, dude, like Teddy, like Tyler said, he looks like he's been doing this for a while. He doesn't look like a rookie. And he even said, he's like, I'm telling you right now, man, whatever, they may win or lose this game. Obviously, they're not going to the playoffs this year. He goes, but I'm telling you, maybe not next season. The season after that, when they start getting more guys for Teddy, more guys to protect him, more guys for him to throw the ball at, he's like, I'm telling you right now, he's like, that guy, everybody in the NFL community is going to know that name. And that is a quote. He even says, he's like, people are going to know Teddy Bridgewater. Not just Vikes fans, not guys in the NFC North.
Teddy Two Gloves. Teddy
people
two
will, he will be talked about in the NFL as, he will maybe be. Not only, but he's going to be a powerhouse.
I don't know if it was something that I just watched on my own or if it was a clip that you sent me, Tyler. Yeah. But the thing, we were getting closer. We were getting close to training camp. So we're pretty far enough removed from the draft at this point that I'm starting to just be like, all right, I'm living with the fact that we don't have Johnny Football. Drake's not coming to Minnesota. It's okay. I'm going to be fine. I'll get over it. Life goes on. Let's watch some Teddy Bridgewater tape and see what this kid has to offer. And the one thing, I don't know if you sent it to me or if I just watched it on my own, but it was Matt Miller breaking down what he liked about Teddy.
I sent that to
you. And the one thing that Teddy did, that he does as a college, did as a college player, is he checks, like he literally goes through his reads. And he was making on a consistent basis, he obviously has a number one, has a number two, and has a number three. And that happens in all of football, whether it's at the PB level or the professional level. But you very, very rarely see young guys, college guys, throw the ball to their third option, to look in and throw to their fourth option. And that's when I was like, and Matt Miller even said, he goes, college prospects, the only college prospects that do these kinds of things are the Andrew Lux, are the Peyton Mannings, the guys that study every single day, that they live being a quarterback. They love football. I mean, Teddy even said it. He's like, I've gotten it. When I was at Louisville, he's like, I uploaded my playbook into my Xbox, and I would play football on my Xbox, and I would, like, just so I can constantly be, like, looking at reps and looking at the screen, and it just, and a guy who lives, breathes football. That's the kind of guy that I want for my franchise quarterback. And I could not be happier that I was 100% wrong about Teddy Bridgewater and wrong about Johnny Football. Well, I wish that Johnny Football is obviously going through a hard time. I wish him the best. I want him to come back, and I want him to be competitive. I want him to be the quarterback that I thought he was going to be.
But what you just said,
Teddy looks great.
Johnny never He goes through one. He looks at his first receiver. He glances at his second, and if it's not there immediately, he breaks off and he breaks that. He, as much as I think Merrill Hodge can be a D-bag and he goes over the top sometimes,
oh, yeah.
There's one thing that Merrill Hodge said that has stuck with me to this day, and I see it in Manziel and I see it in a lot of college quarterbacks who run like that spread option. They break down plays. Defenses don't break down their plays. They break down more plays
on their own.
Like they cause, excuse me, they cause more broken plays than defenses do. Johnny Manziel, if he would look off his first receiver, he'd look off his second, wouldn't even glance at his third, he'd just curl off and run immediately.
And where's Mike Evans? You know,
right, but if Mike, like, say, if Mike Evans isn't there, he just curls off immediately and runs.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't even glance at his third option. And you saw that in his very limited time in Cleveland. He, I mean, not to say that he really had a great third option in Cleveland, but to be honest, Andrew Luck doesn't have an amazing third option ever, but he'll still throw to him.
He'll still figure it out.
He'll still throw to no-hands Kobe Fleener.
And there's a reason why Vikings fans now know the names of Adam Thielen.
Exactly.
Why they know the names of Charles Johnson.
Because no Johnny Manziel-style quarterback is going to throw to Adam Thielen as your third option.
No.
He's going to break off and run. Teddy Bridgewater knows better. He surveys his field. He looks at his first receiver, second receiver. He'll look at his check down before he'll throw.
Absolutely.
And if Adam Thielen's open. That first touchdown, I remember that touchdown that Adam Thielen caught, and you and I were just jumping up, jumping for joy.
Yep.
Because that was a great throw to a guy who most quarterbacks would have not even looked at on that play.
Well, did I tell you, I don't know, really quick, I don't know if I told you, Adam Thielen was on the, he was on K-Fan the like week after he caught that ball,
mm-hmm.
and they the Power Trip Morning Show, three guys, it's Corey Cove, Meat Sauce, Paul Lambert, and yep. Chris Hockey, and they asked him, they noticed when Adam Thielen scored, when he was running through the end zone to find his fiance to throw the ball, they noticed that Kyle Fuller, the defensive back, rookie defensive back for the Bears, they called it book bashing, bashed the ball out of his hand, and they were like, why did he do that? And did he apologize after the game? We saw you talking to him. And Adam Thielen was like, nah, they didn't. He didn't apologize. It's okay, though. He doesn't need to apologize. You know, when I got out onto the field, I came into the huddle. And as I was walking out on the field, we broke the huddle. And I'm going out to the side. And I can hear everybody on the Bears defense go, number 19's a decoy. 1-9's a decoy. He's not getting the ball. Well, sure as shit, he goes and runs a fly route, and Teddy finds him wide open, and Adam Thielen goes, I guess they're just a little mad the decoy got the ball. I was like, that's freaking sweet.
Yeah. And I,
was
and like, I remember cool. that play. Teddy sold it well, too.
Oh, he was looking off the safety
He looks off the safety the entire time.
He's perfect.
Last second, just...
Oops. Yep.
All the way down the field to Mr. Adam Thielen, and that was the easiest touchdown number 19 will ever score career.
Yeah. Well, and that was the thing that made it really, really... down the stretch, the thing he wasn't doing well early was throwing the deep ball well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a timing issue, like you said.
No, absolutely. You get that over time. Sure. Even Andrew Luck had trouble throwing the deep ball his first year a little bit.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, everyone struggles with it. I mean, if Teddy Bridgewater doesn't screw up on his deep balls, Charlie Johnson would be the breakout wide receiver of the year.
No question.
He would have been... Everyone's mind would have exploded with all the touchdowns he would have had. Everyone been like, who the hell is Charlie
Johnson? The amount of catches that Charlie Johnson could have had that missed by this much, I wish I'm sure there's an advanced metric for that somewhere. I want to find it. Yeah, sports science.
Catches missed only by a few inches by rookie quarterbacks.
Yeah, catches missed by less than 6 inches by...
it's nuts. But, I mean, honestly... With what Teddy was given this year, the weapons he was given, all the drama with Adrian Peterson that he was given, just the lousy offensive line. I don't even know if he can call it an offensive line this year. I mean,
well, you're shuffling guys.
You got Fusco broke his arm right after he got a contract. I mean, Matt Khalil went from a sophomore slump to mother of God. What happened? I mean, we just dropped our
Charlie. It was Charlie Johnson.
Yeah.
You were mixing up Charles Johnson with Charlie Johnson.
Yeah. We just dropped him. He was garbage this year. I mean, it was just a dumpster fire. And for him to still come on the field after Castle, breaks,
broke his foot in the New Orleans Saints game. And they actually could have won the Saints game if they wouldn't have overturned that sack.
Yeah, they wouldn't. Yeah, exactly. I mean, all that considered, to go 7-9, I'm pissed. I was pretty impressed.
You always want a winning record out of your team, but I don't think you can be mad about what Teddy was able to do with that squad last year.
Yeah, you really can.
And as me, for me, just not ever being one that, the Vikings were never on my radar as a team until I started hanging out with your brother. For me, too, it was even fun to watch. Because, I had watched my first year out here when Drew and I started watching football together, obviously was a real, real rough year for you guys. So for me to see what you guys were able to do with the rookie quarterback this year was really fun to watch.
It was a perfect kind of rebuilding year. Not only did we rebuild sort of the fan morale and something to get behind, statistically, we got better in just about everything. I mean,
I agree.
Defensively, offensively, I mean, just everything went up. Not to where we want it to be yet, but... It's a start.
It's getting
it's
there.
It's a damn
though.
Good start.
All right. So same question as for the Twins question. What's your record this year? Way too early, obviously, but just indulge me.
Ah, jeez.
Just indulge me.
Super, super early. Here, I'll break it down like this. If we have AP, I think we can we have a real good chance of going 10-6.
Okay.
Without AP, I think we'll go 9-7. Probably 8-8. I think we're getting close, but I don't think we're there just yet. We still need our defense, our young defense, to figure out how to win close games, especially on the road. And I think we're getting close, but I don't think we're there just yet.
I guess where I would say, I mean, I can see 10-6. I see more 9-7 because I see a weaker division this year. I especially see the Bears in a really weird, you know, situation right now. They're in a tough spot.
Yeah.
Lions, you never know with the Lions. You never know what you're going to get with them. Really, it's a wild card. But the Packers are going to be the one to beat. They're going to have another pretty good year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think how we because last year in the division we were garbage. We were a dumpster fire. We only won one game.
Yeah, it was rough for you
so
guys for sure.
I think we do a lot better this year in the division. That's why I think we're either 9-7 or 10-6. I think we compete. I truly think.
In my opinion, I was going to say 9-7 too. I really think you guys are over 500 this year.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. No, because I mean, if you were able to do what you did last, it was 7-9, right?
7-9.
Yeah, man. I mean, Teddy's only getting more experience. Who knows what you're going to get in the draft? I mean, like I said, maybe you'll get some more weapons for him. But I see 9-7, mm-hmm. And especially Mike Zimmer with more confidence, second year as a head coach.
And another year, Norv Turner, which you didn't know if that was going to happen or
nervous.
Not. You were a little nervous about it?
Were you nervous about that? Norv sticking around? I thought Norv might bounce and try to get a head coach.
No, I think he will bounce when he certifies Teddy Bridgewater as an elite quarterback.
And that's
what I think that's when teams are going to be like, okay, he transformed Teddy. We'll give him an offer back. But right now, I don't think he would get an offer. So.
Oh, man, I hope Scott and Norv stick around.
Yeah.
Really
no,
like
I do too.
Teddy.
No,
I
do too.
Really want him to stay.
Yeah.
Nope. It's gonna be a fun year.
Oh hell yeah, they're all fun.
Between the Twins and the Vikings, it's gonna be a fun year for Minnesota sports. I can feel it, and I'm not even a Minnesota sports fan.
It's already kind of starting with the Wild.
Oh,
and
I mean,
the Wild
with the Wild,
kicking
yeah.
in gear. Wild definitely kicking in gear.
Yeah, we didn't really get to touch on that.
They won 6-2 the other night against who'd they beat?
Oh. God.
It was in Calgary, was it?
I don't remember.
They won 6-2 the other night.
Wasn't it the New Jersey Jets?
Yeah, you're right.
Devils.
It was Devils.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Devils.
Yeah, it seems like everybody's just trying to make up for what the Wolves have been doing this year.
Oh, there's a lot. Watching it live at the Staples Center really put it in perspective how long the Wolves have to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They really, really got to win.
You see it on TV and you're really positive. Like, you know, they're young. But then when you go live, you're just like, oh, God. this is what people pay to watch. This is what diehard fans come to watch.
Well, and that's the thing is they, you know, people love it with KG in the building. And there's tons of energy. And at the Target Center, it's great. But on the road with no KG.
Yeah.
Young guys look lost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, man. Well, I would love to talk for another hour, honestly, but
I could do this all night, really, to be honest.
We've almost gone 2 hours. We got to get out of here. Jake, man, honestly, it was awesome having you. Obviously, I consider your brother family, so any family of his is family of mine. So, of course, you're welcome back in our home anytime, and you're welcome back on the podcast anytime via phone, Skype, or hopefully in person again sometime soon.
Can't wait till next
time.
So
we were really glad to have you, man. Seriously.
Can't wait till next time. Honestly, thank you for having me here. This has been a blast, so been having a great time.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thank you. And thank you to all for listening. As always, we love you dearly. We appreciate all the support. Continue to pass the word around. If you haven't already, subscribe to us on iTunes. You know what it is, the 51-yard line. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/the51yardline. And, you know all our names, like our follow all our personal accounts and stuff, too. We will be back on Sunday with a very special Selection Sunday College basketball episode with our buddy Christian again. He'll be back guest hosting with us, so that'll be a lot of fun. Look for that on Sunday. As always, for Steve Cravens.
Thank you for listening.
For Drew Willers.
Thanks, guys.
For Jake Willers.
Thank you.
I'm Tyler Berry, and we'll see y'all next time.